Well, welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Cogan. You may think I have some kind of, you know, St. Patrick's Day hangover that's still ongoing. I don't. That's a new, brand new CD by the arguably the greatest Irish fiddle player on the planet, Liz Carroll, in collaboration with Jake Sharon. It's called Half Day Road, and you'll be hearing it all through the show today. A couple months ago, I was the beneficiary of an incredible movie that I can't remember how I saw this. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it. Someone sent it to me. It was called Chi-Town. It was the story of a young, ambitious and incredibly talented kid named Kiefer Sykes, who played basketball for Marshall High School on Chicago's West Side. It was a film that it's easy to do a movie, I suppose, about basketball, but this film addressed the larger picture of basketball, the kind of intersection between basketball and violence that exists in Chicago. It is the work of an... It's your first film, Nick Buttigan, isn't it?
Yes, it is my first film.
Which it's getting. I suppose, Nick, that I was one of the first to see it, and I raved in print about it, but it is getting an astonishing reception at film festivals across the country and on Amazon Prime, too. You came, you're a kid out of Brooklyn. You came here to work on a TV documentary in 2010, and you then began, because of, I suppose, your passion for basketball, you began to explore the youth basketball scene in Chicago, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. It was both my passion for basketball and kind of combined with not having family or that many friends in Chicago, so I had weekends free, and had a friend of mine who was with me who was a cameraman, and just started making some connections, and eventually found out about a high school basketball all-star game. That was its first year, and this was 2011, the spring of 2011. And it was the top high school seniors from the south side against the top high school seniors from the west side. And that was kind of my first introduction, was prepping for that game. And that got me into a bunch of different high schools around the south and west side, like Farragut and Simeon and Marshall and Crane, and really just got to bounce around because there were so many kids playing in that game from different schools.
And they're also, one of the things is, Nick Butterman, is the level of talent. Were you surprised at all? I mean, you're a big city kid. You grew up and lived in New York, but were you surprised by the level of talent?
Well, I wasn't surprised because of what I'd heard about Chicago already. You know, I was really interested initially because of Ronnie Fields and hearing his story and just knowing of what a legend he was. And then, you know, knowing that there were so many players that came out of Chicago, and that was the year that Derrick Rose was having his MVP season.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were sort of seeing all these effects of the Chicago high school basketball system in the NBA. So I knew it was a good breeding ground.
When you first started, you and your friend started taking cameras to these games, was it with the notion, I have the notion, of course, that your idea for the film as it's represented in Chi-Town grew exponentially from your initial encounters, but what was your initial idea?
Well, it was kind of like you set up in the beginning, which was to sort of tell a story about the intersection of basketball and gun violence in the city of Chicago, because from us bouncing around the city, we saw that in every facet that we saw that basketball was being used in some way, it was being used to keep kids safe or to teach lessons, and it was just beyond the game in such a huge way in Chicago. So we wanted to tell that from different angles, from coaches and players and criminologists, but we also didn't really know exactly what that story was going to be at the time. So
that was
the original idea.
You must have known that you were biting off a big mouthful in trying to do that, did you not?
We did. Yeah. We did. We were naive at the time. In the first film, we didn't know what we couldn't do yet.
Were you at all, Nick, were you shocked by the level of violence? I know the reputation of Chicago nationally is a some kind of killing ground, and it's certainly less fewer murders in New York than there are here. But were you not just by the violence, but also you were in some places that most Chicagoans never see, and we're privy to seeing people living in conditions that are, to my mind, certainly substandard, if not almost abusive. Were you shocked by pockets of poverty in this town and violence?
Yeah, I was, and I was shocked at kind of what the community has had to endure.
Yeah.
And you know, I was going back and forth between Lincoln Park and the south and west sides of Chicago when I was filming, and just to be kind of, you know, it's a short drive away, and to see those two different worlds, and then to talk to everybody in the communities and see that it's just sort of become a way of life for so long that everyone you talk to has had some tragedy in their life. It is shocking, and it's really sad, and I was shocked by it.
Well, and I think one of the things too, and we'll talk, I'm going to keep you on for another half hour, I hope, and talk about the you must have seen a number of very, very talented, exciting ball players, and you wound up focusing on a young man now named Kiefer Sykes. What was it about Kiefer that he's a good ball player, but there are a lot of good ball players in this town? What was it beyond his skill on the court that appealed to you?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, we weren't even really that looking at all at his skill on the court, because he wasn't really on anyone's radar.
Too short.
So, you know, that was kind of what he was short. He was under recruited. He only was recruited by a couple schools, and you know, a lot of good players are coming out of the city at that time, and I think he went under the radar also. But you know, when you're trying to make a documentary about high school kids and high school players, you want to talk to people who can tell you what's going on in their head, talk about their life, and with Kiefer, he was always just sort of ready to talk and tell us how he was feeling, and he was really able to express all those emotions. And then, you know, his house, when you watch the documentary, you see that when you go to his home, it's just full of energy. He's got, you know, six cousins living with him, and his parents, and just a big, loving house. And so the energy there was so kind of different than some other things we had seen. He was just kind of a leader from the very beginning. There was something about him that had a quality. But I don't want to say that we were sure he was going to be what he turned into be. We didn't know at the time.
Yeah, how could you? How could you? But it's an incredibly wise choice. And Kiefer Sykes does become the star of Chi-Town. It's Shi-Town. You can find it on Amazon Prime. I'm assuming those of you listening across the country will find it soon at a film festival near you. It is winning awards all over the place. Nick Butterbin is the director, one of the producers. It is, in a way, Nick, and we're going to take a little break for a couple minutes. It is, I think, was for you a real labor of love, and I think it was a... I think you're now on your way to becoming a full-time filmmaker, and I think the lessons you've learned making this film will serve you very, very well, because it is, in my book, a 4-star film. So you hang on, and you listeners hang on, and we'll be back in a couple minutes. Back. That again is Liz Carroll, in collaboration with Jake Sharon. A new CD called Half Day Road. Liz Carroll, without argument, the greatest fiddle player, Irish fiddle player on the planet. And one of the great new lights in the filmmaking world is Nick Butterbin. We have never met. We've talked on the phone a number of times, but I am a huge fan of his first feature film, a documentary called Chi-Town. You can see clips and you can, it's available for viewing. Is it not, Nick? It's on Amazon Prime now, right?
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime, and it's also on iTunes if you don't have Prime. And then you can also check out the trailer if you want on YouTube or at our website, which is
ShyTownTheMovie.com. This took you, as I said before, just before we went to commercial break, it's a real labor of love. It also took you roughly 7 years to make this film, and that is a serious commitment of time and probably much of your own money and credit card debt and all sorts of other stuff. When did you know, when did you know I have a real film here. I have a good movie. Is there a moment like that that transpires?
Yeah, there is. It took a while. I mean, we made a few different versions of it that got, just before I get to the good part, that were, you know, panned by our friends and colleagues.
And family, yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, exactly. Doing those screenings and taking that feedback and trying to you know, put a smile on your face. But we, after doing that for a few years, you know, we decided to focus strictly on Kiefer, and we followed him for a few more years. And then we once we started editing it, you know, you could see pieces of maybe a good film. But honestly, we didn't know that we had a good film until we got into South by Southwest. And once we got our, that was our first acceptance to a film festival, and it's a big one, and that validated a lot for us, because up until that point it really just been us on a laptop watching it, and
sure,
it was good, but we didn't know for sure.
Well, one of the other one of the amazing things, and I hate to use the term lucky, in that the narrative of the film was certainly sadly strengthened by a few events in Kiefer Sykes's life as he goes to play basketball at Division I in Green Bay and is a star at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay. But his dad dies of a heart attack, a friend is shot, another friend goes to prison, and those are things you couldn't, that the most adept screenwriter couldn't come up with, and the film benefits from those. But I don't like to use the word lucky, do you?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, look, this is the circle that I was sort of alluding to earlier, that if you live on the South and West Sides, parts of Chicago,
yeah,
you're going to be in a circle of people where these things unfortunately happen, and it's way too normalized, but it does. So for us, you know, I think we were fortunate that Kiefer was able to express kind of what he was feeling and the experience he was having with what was happening to his friends around him and family around him. But no, I mean, it's if you spend time in those neighborhoods, you know, the sad fact is that, you know, you're going to be connected to some of this violence in one way or another. And that's a big part of the problem, is that it's just way too normalized.
Well, it's kind of in the weird small world category. We both have become friends with a former basketball star named Sean Harrington, who is a classic example of the terrors that lurk out there. Sean was a star basketball player who, years later, working as a sort of coach at Marshall High School, tried to save his daughter in a mistaken drive-by shooting and was paralyzed. Sean is in the film. You must have been inspired by him, yes, Nick?
Yeah, Sean's amazing.
Yeah,
and a real, real tragedy. But as someone who has continued to, you know, try to use what happened to him as a lesson and help other people, and he's just incredible. And I actually just saw him less than a month ago in New Mexico at a film festival, and he and I got to do a Q&A together. And he has a book about him that's incredible as well. A mutual friend of ours as well.
Russ Bradbird.
Yeah,
it truly is an amazing book. You won some awards, didn't you, hold on, I'm going to mention the book. It's All the Dreams We've Dreamed, a story of hoops and handguns on Chicago's West Side, published by Chicago Review Press and written by Russ Bradbird. When you take this film, I know you have big plans for this film, and part of what you want to do, or what you call impact screenings, at various places, maybe perhaps in schools, for students, coaches, and players. But I've got to believe, Nick, for everybody who I know who has seen this film has been deeply impacted by it. You realize that, do you not?
I do, fortunately, because I've been able to watch it in theaters with so many different audiences at film festivals and had great Q&As and, you know, great receptions and conversations afterward. And that was, you know, that was a big part of what we were trying to do, and what I was trying to do as a director was to make a film that brought out real emotion in people, because I think there's all sorts of different types of documentaries, and some of them are kind of telling you a story of something that maybe already happened, and some of them are giving you a lot of facts. But for us, we wanted to tell a story that really made people feel things and made you feel excited for Kiefer, or sad, or emotional, and really get invested in the film.
So, well, I also think it gives people some important insights into real life in Chicago as well. You know, I think there's a section or of this, someone in the film says, you know, that they have to always, you have to live a watchful life if you live on the west or south sides of Chicago. You have to be very concerned with where you're going, when you're going there too. Even if you are a major kind of basketball stud like Kiefer is, you must have been. I don't hang around as many 17-year-olds and kids as I used to, but this guy is a really wonderfully introspective young man, isn't he?
He's incredible.
Yeah,
he's amazing. He's a really unique kid, but he's also an example of, you know, I think there's plenty of Kiefer Sykes out there with the potential of him, you know, in those neighborhoods. I think he's an example of that.
Sure. I think he's, I don't know if he comes off as a hero to young people, but the fact that he seems very much in love with this nice, nice woman who's in the film, who's the mother of his then one child, and now he has two children, and he seemed to adjust quite well to what would have been what I would have anticipated to be a serious culture shock coming from Marshall High to the, you know, to Wisconsin Green Bay. He seems to have even handled that well.
He did. You know, I mean, I think it's a credit to his parents and a credit to him coming up, you know, through Chicago high school basketball system and so many great coaches and community centers and people who invested in him. I mean, Kiefer's a special kid. There's no question about it. But mm-hmm. I think one of the things the film illustrates is the circle of people around him, from, you know, his parents to his coaches to the community centers that stayed open for him and people who believed in him. Really, like, all of that together was what made Kiefer who he is. But yeah, he's been amazing. I mean, he's adapted to every environment he's in. I think he's gonna, I don't want to, you know, I don't, we don't know what's gonna happen with him after the summer, but his goal is to come back. And well, I guess if you want to talk about Kiefer's future, we can. If not,
sure. Well, I want to talk. Well, after, yeah, we got to get the news, and I'm going to keep you on for a few more minutes. I want to talk about Kiefer's future, and I also want to talk about yours, because having a film like this is not kind of sometimes audition tape that some would-be directors send off, a 5-minute thing. This must be getting you some serious and intriguing attention, isn't it? I hope it is. You know, it should be.
It's tricky. It's a crowded market, so you got to keep working hard. But yes, I mean, it's been really nice to get, you know, all the awards and for people. I have a manager now, and we're trying to pitch some new ideas. For me, I just like to keep shooting. I have a new idea that I'm working on, and we just started shooting it recently. And I think the best way to make a documentary is just to start shooting. So I found that it can be tough to get people to, you know, want to fund or make your documentary. So if you're in that situation, like I've been, every time I want to make a movie, you kind of just start shooting.
Yeah, and well, look at the way it's worked for you in this thing. I mean, you not only came across Kiefer, who I think has serious star potential beyond the basketball court, but you have told him what I think is an essential story about any urban environment, particularly in this case Chicago. So Nick, if I can, at your home in Brooklyn, I know you got a new kid, but if you could hold on for about 5 minutes through news, we'll continue this for a few minutes and tell people how to see this movie. Just go to iTunes, go to Amazon Prime. The movie is ChiTownTheMovie.com is the website. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Indulging my St. Patrick's Day hangover, I'm playing a new CD by the great Liz Carroll. It's called Half Day Road, done in collaboration with Jake Sharon. I have a few more minutes with Nick Butterbin. Am I pronouncing your name right, Nick?
Almost. It's Butterbin.
Butterbin. Okay. I should always check these things before. But the name of the movie that I got, that is Chi-Town, Chi-Town, and ChiTownTheMovie.com with no dash. and also available on Amazon Prime and iTunes. And when I wrote about it about a month and a half ago, I said that it is exciting, emotional, painful, and ultimately inspirational and hopeful. Beautifully filmed, it makes its important points without pandering or preaching. It is a great movie. I've seen it two times since, and it is a fabulous movie, of course. And we both addressed this when we last talked, Nick Budabin, that any movie about Chicago youth basketball lives in the shadow of the amazing and quite good Hoop Dreams. But you like that movie. This is a vastly different movie. I don't know if there's any, except on the surface, of a way to compare those two. Do you? I mean, I'm sure it's nice to be compared to Hoop Dreams, but I don't see it. This is a vastly different movie.
Yeah, I think they're very different movies. I mean, there's obvious similarities with it being Chicago and being, you know, Kiefer went to Marshall, Arthur A.G. went to Marshall. And, yeah, I mean, it's amazing to be, you know, uttered in the same sentence as Hoop Dreams. I'm a huge fan, and it inspired me to, you know, start making movies a long time ago. So, but at the same time, you know, we were, you know, cognizant of those comparisons.
Sure.
And really felt like the story we were telling was sort of the Hoop Dreams continued, because Hoop Dreams takes you through high school. And for us, we were really curious about what happens after high school. You know, when you leave the city, is that safety net? How do kids adjust to being outside of Chicago? And how do the ones who don't get to leave Chicago, how does that affect them? So that was what we tried to follow, was those 4 to 5 years after high school.
Yeah, it's a brilliant movie. The young man featured in the movie, Kiefer Sykes, a great young basketball player, he gets a little kind of taste of NBA, but he then winds up playing, you know, covered that he has a pro basketball career in the foreign courts of Korea and Turkey and Italy, and he's doing well, is he not?
Yeah, he's doing great. Every year he keeps moving to a higher league and doing well in each league, and he just had 43 points recently in the game, which broke the single game scoring record for the league he's playing in. And so he's really, really playing really well, and he'll come back this summer. And the plan is, is to try out again for the NBA, and he's got a great shot.
Yeah, he reminds me a little of Derrick Rose. I mean, he is just a very, very exciting ball player. What, and you know, he's also got a college degree in communications, if I'm not getting senile at the moment. Does he think of himself as a movie star now? He's been to enough of your screenings. How has he reacted to this stardom that takes place in Chi-Town?
Well, I think he's loving it. We're having a great time. We've gone to a bunch of film festivals together. We were in Austin and we were in London together and Chicago, and he was recently in New York with us for a big screening. So it's been great. But what he's been really great at is using it as a platform to talk about the things that are important to him and shine a light on his community. And one of the ways he does that is he started a foundation called Free 10 Foundation, which he has basketball camps in Chicago and Green Bay as well over the summer that are all paid for. And so, you know, by coming to these screenings and doing the Q&As afterward, he's able to kind of talk to people about, you know, what's actually happening in the community, and then point them towards the foundation, which you can also find through the website.
Yeah. Well, I just think you two guys, you make quite a team, and I know there were other collaborators on the film, but you two make quite a team, and I keep following the career of Sean Harrington, too, which is, you know, that's where hope lies, man. I mean, that's where you find hope in this otherwise sometimes bleak city. Nick, I'm going to be following your career, no matter if you make documentaries or you one day get picked to make the latest, X-Men, whatever those big money things, whatever those big money things are. The next time in Chicago, I'd love to meet you. I am a great admirer of your talent. So thank you very much again. If you just go, ladies and gentlemen, the website's a cool website. You can see trailers, and then you can that can lead you to the movie. Go to ChiTownTheMovie.com. You will not be disappointed. You will be enlightened, and you'll be thrilled. Nick, thanks. Go take care of your little kid.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
All right, you too. You too. We'll take a little commercial break, and we will talk about a fascinating book, which is it's fascinating and weird at the same time. It is like nursery rhymes with real kids in them. We're going to talk to it's a collaborative effort between my friend and a frequent guest on the show, Larry Broutman, and Rich Green. I'm meeting Rich for the first time, so as you will too. So we'll be back in a couple minutes. Fiddle player on the planet. It's a new CD titled Half Day Road that she has done in collaboration with Jake Sharon. It is my great pleasure to have in here. We were going to have Larry Broutman in here. He's a great photographer who's been on the show a number of times talking about his photography. But I said, let's let Larry rest. I want to talk to Rich Green, who is the illustrator and writer of a collaborative effort with Larry called Chicago Treasure. This book is going to be on for, 40 minutes. Rich, it was a pleasure to meet you. So we'll get to the details of the book. How do you describe this book? It's markedly unusual.
Yeah, I think part of it is that knowing a little bit of the history of Larry's other projects, it sort of is an evolution in the
Chicago
types of
monuments
works.
And,
right. He started with Chicago Unleashed, which was a book where he featured his photography of animals all throughout Africa in settings from Chicago and made them these whimsical and fantastical moments of things that could never really happen in real life. And that actually stemmed from a project that he was commissioned to do with Lurie Children's Hospital, where some of those are murals.
That's right. Their murals are on
different floors of the building.
That
right?
Amazingly artistic and art-filled hospital.
Stemmed the idea of, hey, I could turn this into a book. And so Larry made Chicago Unleashed based on that. And so then in the process, he started working on some other books about Chicago, which was Chicago Monumental. Then he had Chicago Eternal. And he worked with John Rabius, who's the third person that's part of the project, on those books, because that oftentimes required photos composited inside of other photos to make those situations happen. And so I happened to be taking a course at Art Institute, a continuing ed course, and John was the instructor. And I have been working on children's books, very active in the Society of Children Book Writers and Illustrators. And so getting to know John through this course, he had showed me the work they did on Chicago Unleashed at the time.
And you must have, because I fell in love with that book, too.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Charming.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Charming.
So a few months after that course ended, John contacted me and said, Larry, who did that book, is interested in doing one that features children and wants to add in this fairy tale, nursery book rhyme type of element of illustration. And he said, hey, I know this guy. That's what he does. And that's kind of how it all began from there.
Well, it's a very, it's an incredibly ambitious project in that you basically create a newspaper in here.
Correct.
Show the Chicago Pretender. And you have written some of these stories, right?
That's correct, yeah. So when it all began, Larry contacted me and said, I'm thinking about maybe 10 or 12 illustrations in the book. And that was 3.5 years ago, and there's 63 illustrations in the book. And it started out with some photos that he had already taken of some kids through the Chicago Lighthouse preschool programs. Mm-hmm. And so he sent me over some photos, and we started working on making some illustrations with popular stories of... the very first one was Humpty Dumpty, for example. Mm-hmm. And while we were working on that...
Boy Blue, the Princess and the Frog.
Yeah, he said, how are we going to tell the story of some of these things? So we decided that if it was a true story, we needed to kind of summarize it. And we came up with the idea of Chicago Pretender, where it's a little bit of, imagination and a little bit of a reality and a whole lot of imagination.
Yeah, it's almost got the Chicago Tribune
puts a little bit of a twist on the story and shortens it so that it's a single page read. And if it's a rhyme based illustration, then it actually has the rhyme or some variation that fits a modern day, storytelling.
This is what I'm terribly taken with. And I want you to explain. Now, we're going to try to explain visually, ladies and gentlemen. There's a thing that looks like the front page of a newspaper called the Chicago Pretender with the headline, Wolf joined Chicago Fire Department, and it has a small version of the illustration that is on the opposite page, which features a human wolf. Who is this?
Yeah, so that young boy is one of the students from the Chicago Lighthouse Group.
Salvador Zacharias.
Yes, and one of the things we wanted to do is, even if we were putting them traditionally, the wolf is the bad guy in the
story. Right.
We did not want the kids ever to be the bad guys in these stories. So in The Three Little Pigs, the big bad wolf is now a good wolf, and he uses that ability to blow out house fires as opposed to blowing houses down.
Now, Richmond, when you would sit with Larry and John, and start to conceptualize these things, would one of you toss off an idea, or how did it work? Because it is a true collaborative effort here.
Yeah, so it depended. Sometimes it would be we'd start thinking of what stories should we cover, what kind of different stories should we look for, someone that might fit. Larry would meet with some of the folks that run the Lighthouse preschool programs, and they may say, we have a young lady who would be perfect for Goldilocks, or we have a personality that would be so wonderful for you to photograph. And he would contact me and say, could you sketch up some ideas for how I might want to have the children pose as much as they will pose.
This is a wonderful, Rich, yeah. This is a wonderful creative challenge for you,
yeah.
Too, because it is a challenge, but there's also a lot of freedom involved in here, too.
This is one of the best projects I've ever been part of. It's so fun because you're right. We got to dream up these worlds the kids are in based on stories that you've known your whole life. But if you go back and read some of these stories, they're much more interesting and bizarre than you remember them as little kids, right? And so we started working on some sketches, and then Larry would go take photos, send back, what could be 5 photos or 105 photos, and we would kind of pick and choose, because sometimes if the little, these are little kids who are not professional models, they're just everyday children.
Right, but that's one of the charms, too.
And
you can see.
Yeah, we would pick and choose.
There's a little boy. It's a young boy climbs beanstalk, and the look on this kid's face is priceless. His name is Zach Rogers.
Correct.
He plays Zach. Where did the photo shoots take place?
They would take place. Larry would have some of the photo shoots done in his condo. Some of the photo shoots were done outside his building. Some of the photo shoots were done at the Chicago Lighthouse preschools. It could have been at the children's homes. Some of the kids have disabilities, so he would actually go to their homes and take photos of them there. And I think that's the other piece of this that is really important to mention, is that we include a very diverse cast.
Oh, no question.
Of characters, and yet we're trying to make everyone feel included. It's really about inclusion and making all these kids feel like they can become anything that they want to be.
Yeah.
And that's why the book is called Chicago Treasure, because it's the children are the treasure, right?
So. I mean, here is one. I mean, the difficulties of shooting young kids. I don't know how old this guy is. Jack Linton is a Humpty Dumpty's buddy.
That was the very first piece Larry and I worked on for
is
the project.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And the kid could not be happier. Humpty Dumpty looks pretty happy, too. It is just a charming thing. And then, let's say, you would work these illustrations up, and you'd go back to Larry and say, what do you think of this? And
So I would send him pencil sketch versions with the photos of the children in the place of where they might be positioned. And we may go through a few iterations of getting the sketches just sorted out just right. And then I'd start work on full color. I use all digital, so I did it all in Adobe Photoshop for all the drawing and the coloring and the painting and everything, which actually helps, because on top of the fact that you're dealing with the photos of the kids, you can also then digitally manipulate little pieces, like if an arm or a hand would be better silhouetted in the illustration and moved out a little slightly, you could use Photoshop to make those type of adjustments, and no one will ever know that that's what took place. And then the storytelling itself, you're looking right now at a scene with Jack and Jill, and there's backstory that isn't even necessarily part of the book here, but those two children were in the preschool program together, and the Lighthouse preschool program combines fully visual and then visually impaired children together, so that they have a acceptance and an understanding of each other at a very early age, and almost become advocates for one another
as they move
on to other school programs. And in this case, Cameron plays Jack and Rochelle is Jill, and Rochelle is blind and Cameron is not. And in school, he became her her Jack, basically. He would help her around class. He would look out for and protect her. And so that's a scenario when Larry saw that happening. He said, these are Jack and Jill. There's no doubt about
it. But that inspired a alteration of the original thing. Did you wrote some of these and Larry wrote a few?
Larry did a lot of the work on the rhymes. And then
I'm going to read. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. The way was steep, the way was long, but Jack helped Jill come after. I will be your eyes, he said. I'll look out for us both. And Jill was safe, for Jack was kind, and that's what matters most. That's awfully sweet.
Right. Right.
That is awfully sweet. And here's Muffin, the best Muffin. I mean, the book is charming. Again, ladies and gentlemen, the name of the book is Chicago Treasure, and it's available, you know, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. I am assuming that it's available at the Lighthouse for the Blind, because it the is. Lighthouse, the proceeds from this book are going to the Lighthouse for the Blind and also to Access Living. So you could go to ChicagoLighthouse.org and find it. We're going to continue on talking. It's divided into three specific sections.
Correct.
Now, how did that idea come to be? Because I was kind of stunned, pleasantly stunned, Rich Green.
We weren't entirely sure in the beginning how we were going to pull that all together. And the book designer, whose name is Carol Harrelson, she has worked with Larry on all of his other book projects, kind of took all the material and took on the task of figuring out how do I take all of these guys' crazy ideas and merge them into one book. And that's when she sort of started working on splitting them up on the illustration of the, you know, fairy tales and storybooks in the very first section. And the second section, it's all of the children that have now been placed into famous pieces of art that are part of the Art Institute, known worldwide. This is not just Chicago.
Well, I mean, I love Nighthawks is one of my favorite paintings ever. But I'm also taken with this one. This incredibly, how many people are in here? There are 14 people and like three dogs.
A couple of dogs. Yeah, the Wolf of Larry's dogs.
The, the old woman who lived in a shoe. And these are portraits taken by I'm thinking to myself, now you must know, Larry is a great photographer.
Correct.
But this must have been a great challenge for him.
So what he did on this is some of those photos he had from just random shoots at the lighthouse. But when we were trying to figure out how do we lay all these out together, we needed some specific photos taken so that we could have things like the children looking like they're climbing up the string of the boot that she lives in, or reaching down. So like this, in the back of the book, there's some photos that actually show you the real photography.
How he did this.
So one of the boys is actually on the roof of Larry's car looking like he's reaching down to grab his brother. And the brother was actually taken to a rock climbing facility where he's doing some rock climbing that gives us the illusion that he's climbing up that shoestring rope. So it was a combination of, you know, several different photo shoots that had to take place to make that all into one final image.
Now, how long did it take you three fellows and your other
until it released was just shy of 3.5 years total.
Wow.
That wasn't working necessarily full time on any one thing, because we would get a batch of photos and ideas for kids, and then we'd start working on them, and then Larry would say, you know what, let's add about 5 more or 10 more, and it grows over time. And so, it kind of progressed throughout that period. And then as he would meet people throughout his life or someone that would inspire or touch, you know, his heart, they would get added onto the project and we'd come up with a character. Or sometimes the children would just have a favorite character that they always loved or wanted to be, and we would make sure we worked them into that character.
This I find, and it's always a weird thing, but I've done it for years, to talk about something visual on the radio, but this, I'm haunted by this photograph.
Oh, really?
I find this young woman, Milan Webb, is the Millard's daughter. It's just a haunting portrait, and it goes to, you know, what a great photographer Larry is.
He really is, yes.
All right, we're going to take a break and get some news, and I'm going to continue on with Rich Green, the author and the illustrator of this fabulous book. This book has appealed to everybody, don't you think?
Oh, it applies to all age ranges.
I think
absolutely.
Kids would go nuts.
Oh, yeah,
for
and
it.
Grandparents love having the ability to reflect back on characters they grew up with and to share it with their grandkids.
Well, I think the writing is very clever too. That's a credit to you and and Larry. Larry, I'm sorry you can't join us, but I'm having a great time with your friend, Rich. Welcome back. That again, if you've been listening to the entire show, is Liz Carroll and Jake Sharon from their new CD, Half Day Road. It's kind of my lingering St. Patrick's Day celebration and or hangover. I'm talking in here and having a great time with Rich Green, one of the geniuses behind this fascinating book. I've never seen a book like this, Rich. It's called Chicago Treasure. It is, one portion of it is young people photographically inserted into some of Mr. Green's fantastic illustrations telling some old fairy tales, with Little Boy Blue and The Princess and the Frog, and sort of rewritten with an upbeat thing. The wolf does not burn down anybody's house. The wolf joins the Chicago Fire Department. The second section of the book, and it could not initially, Rich, have been conceived as these three sections, was it?
No,
this must have grown organically.
Yeah, no,
somehow.
Originally it would have been that it was some of these illustrations, some of the art, photos within art, and then some photos within photos, and really the illustrations were supposed to be a small segment of the book, but Larry started having so much fun with what we were doing, it expanded.
I don't blame him.
The second section, which is now showing, actually has children now composited into famous pieces of artwork.
At the Art Institute.
Right, that are at the Art Institute, but known around the world.
Oh,
so
sure.
It's not Chicago specific in this case.
Well, the other thing, the thing I like about this is there could have been a way to jazz this up and make it really kind of almost silly.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a very subtle treatment here. You can almost say, looking.
Sometimes it takes a little time to figure out where the kid is, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Or you see, yeah, exactly. This one, I'm looking at all these. There are some very, very famous paintings featured. I am, of course, quite taken with Nighthawks, where there's just the insertion of a tiny, tiny little girl. Did you work on much of this?
This was all Larry working with John. And together they worked on compositing these together. So, yeah, so John would have then used Photoshop to kind of mask out around the photo of the child and put them in. And then, of course, it takes some adjustments of brightness and levels and things to make it feel like it's lit to be part of that painting scene.
Well, the other one, there's a little girl inserted into the famous American Gothic. You must have been, though, charmed by this section.
Oh, absolutely. And don't you love, too, the costuming and everything they've got her into truly match the mother in the picture? Yeah, right.
Well, there's a real subtlety to it that this one, I don't, another painting by Grant Wood, In Full Bloom. Now, these things, the third large portion of the book is called Sightings. Kids and critters show up around town.
Right.
Tell me about this section.
So in this section, it takes the combination of Larry's photographs of the children and merges them into Larry's photography from all kinds of sites around the city, and then adds a sense of fun and whimsy, again, that wouldn't necessarily be all realistic. It's all done in a whimsical way.
Now, is this your illustration? Let me ask you this.
That is actually another photo that Larry has taken.
Oh,
so it's a photo of a clown put onto the bean, and then the child looks like they're reflecting their inner spirit as this, you know, clown and fun-loving child, right?
What's been the reception for this book?
So obviously there's several angles to that, right? One is the children and their families seeing some of this for the first time, which has been incredible. And then we actually got a chance to meet Larry had met them obviously through photographing, but myself, I was doing all this work from my home studio, right? So when we got to the book launch celebration, so many of the families and the children were there, and to get to meet them and see them in person, see how they've grown up in the last couple of years, see them so proud of themselves in the portraits, and to see the diversity of all the children that were there, because this book does not care about anything, race, gender, ability. It is 100% inclusive of all children, and so to get to meet them and see them all in one room was really quite spectacular. And on the flip side of that, reviews that have started coming in from folks who have been, you know, blogging and reviewing about it really did pick up on the fact that there is this sense of it being disruptive in a beautiful way. It's disruptive in that it takes what would have traditionally been able-bodied white characters, as one of the reviewers said, and makes them anything. If we had a fantastic photo of a young girl jumping, we changed, you know, Jack be nimble into Jackie be nimble. It didn't matter, boy or girl, what color, what ability. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of this project, is that it makes everyone feel special.
I got to tell you, Richard, there's a lot to be proud of with
well,
this book.
Well, thank you.
I mean, Larry told me about it some years ago, and I couldn't even get my head around it. I was like, you're going to do what? You're going to do what? There was a lighthouse on Michigan Avenue, was there not?
Yeah, so over the summer, the Chicago Lighthouse put on lighthouses on the Mag Mile.
Which was a
public art display all up and down Michigan Avenue. And there were 51 different lighthouses of all different amazing artists.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough that Larry and his wife Susan sponsored a Chicago Treasure-themed lighthouse where I got to actually decorate the lighthouse. And we used all the illustrations from the forthcoming book at the time and put them on there, had first names of all the kids circling around the rows of the rims of the lighthouse sculpture. And so then to see that go out in front of the Disney store on Michigan Avenue,
right,
which was the perfect
block
place
from my house too,
which
yeah,
is the perfect
yeah.
place for all the themes of the stories, and then to see the children and the families start showing up in photos through social media where they were there seeing themselves, you know, becoming famous. And Larry had often told the children when he was taking their picture, you know, little kids would say, am I going to be famous? And he said, yeah, we're going to make you a star.
Oh.
And so one example in the back there shows the young lady who played Little Orphan Annie standing in front of the lighthouse looking at herself, and some of the other children who happened to be out there that day really did recognize that was her and asked her for her autograph. And so it's a real feel-good moment that maybe in some small way you did make these children a star, right?
Rich Green, this is a real feel-good book, even though poor old Shadow, who was a very special dog pal to Larry and his wife Susan, died, but the book's dedicated to Shadow.
Right.
Shadow was a cute little dog.
Shadow is actually in that scene with the old woman in the shoe.
I know. Now, what is this? This must inspire you and empower you on a number of different levels.
Yeah, it's actually, what's really been interesting is that it's kind of interesting because my mom actually, for years, was a school bus driver in Tinley Park and would do routes with special needs children. And so she would always come home with stories of, you know, different things. Like she'd go to some of their special baseball games and all kinds of stuff, and also talk about the challenges that a lot of the kids and their families face. There's so much more to the finances and the schooling. It's a much more complicated process. And so as I got involved in this project and it became more inclusive to all of these different children and working with the Lighthouse and starting to really understand what the programs at the Lighthouse really are.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it than you might think, because it's helping people get jobs. They employ disabilities.
Yeah.
They train. They work with veterans. And so I think it's kind of an interesting, like, maybe I didn't know it at the time, but I've been groomed a little bit for this my whole life because of
That's
what experience
so
that my mom had had.
That's
and so I just feel so proud of the work that we put out, that we're celebrating all these special kids. That's what it really boils down to.
Well, you're a good guy, Richard. I'm glad you came.
Larry is a really
Larry's
good guy.
A great guy. Larry's great.
I just have a really good mentor.
Yeah. And all of the proceeds of this this amazing book, published by my friend Sharon Woodhouse.
Yes.
Who published, among other things, the famous book about the Billy Goat. But you can also get all the information you need, and other information, too, by the way, by going to chicagolighthouse.org or accessliving.org. The proceeds from the sale of this charming, charming, charming book. And very clever, too. I mean, it's not just charming. It's very... It's,
well, I appreciate that.
Oh, no, it's
we
very...
Both, Larry, I'm sure Larry is listening right now and also...
He better be listening. The hell? You better be listening. Rich, it's a pleasure to meet you. Come in and talk about some of your other projects.
I would love to. Thank you so
Wonderful.
Much for having me.
Safe drive back to Joliet.
Thank you.
We'll take a little break and then we'll talk music. That is a song I'm going to play the whole version of later once I explain to you what it is. It is my distinct pleasure to have on two of the grandest talents in the city of Chicago and, frankly, nationwide. Tom Michael and Becky Menzie have been collaborating on various musical adventures for, I cannot believe this, you two, 20th anniversary. Is that actually possible?
Well, we've been singing together for 30 years.
No, no, I don't believe any of this. You both seem, first of all, you're
20 years as a team.
You're so ageless, the two of you.
I love you.
You really, really are. Your next musical adventure begins in April, Saturday nights in April at Davenport's. Where else? Davenportspianobar.com. It is called Reimagine the Beatles. Let's go back, though. Where did you two first meet?
We met at a piano bar called Boombala on Lincoln Avenue.
Remember it well.
Yeah, about 30 years ago. Becky was the piano player there, and I was brand new to the city. We both were brand new to the city. I knew two songs. I went in, and I sang my two songs with Becky at an open mic. And we didn't become an official duo until 20 years ago.
I've got to ask you, what were those two songs?
I'm sure it was something that Barbra Streisand.
No, they were actually, it was all of me and God Bless the Child.
Those nice. Too good. What was it that, you know, so you would see each other around the club scene, and you were both eminently nice people and obviously became friendly, but when does it take the leap to collaborating on a show as you started to do 20 years ago? What was the initial? It's got to be more than, or maybe it's not. You guys, you know me pretty well. Maybe it's like, hey, we should do a show together.
We were performing together at Town Hall in New York,
mm-hmm.
and we were closing night of the Mabel Mercer Cabaret Convention in Town Hall, and. We were the last act up, and we did really well.
You put mega stars on that, and you would find out that day. You would walk up, and you would say, you would see the order, and you would be like third in Act One.
Uh-huh.
And the stars were there, and all of a sudden we walked up, and we saw that we were closing this special night.
Wow.
And we went, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
And we ran to Carnegie Hall for a rehearsal room.
But it was that night, after that performance, we got such a good reception as a duo that we went back to the hotel room that night and listened. We thought, okay, we'll give it a year and see what happens. And here we are 20 years later.
Well, have you two been able to, Tom Michael and Becky Menzie, to produce a show every year for those 20 years?
A different show.
Yeah, every single year. Wow, what was the first one?
Romantic Notions.
Featuring the music of
all love songs. It was not our best show, but
well, you have to grow into it. What do you mean?
We did. Well, you know, people at that point came in a codependent way because they knew us.
Sure, sure.
And it was as we started to really think of ourselves as a business, and we got more even national notice. We realized that nobody in Boca Raton will come to see Becky and Tom, but if we're singing the songs of the Beatles, they will come to see Becky and Tom, who performed at Carnegie Hall or Lincoln Center, because they relate to the Beatles.
Yeah, but also, I mean, you have both flowered in the era of when I think cabaret and the whole notion of cabaret has changed a little, and one needed to produce shows. I know exactly what you mean. In order to take a show somewhere else, it cannot just be Tom Michael and Becky Menzie have a lot of friends in Chicago, so here, see them in Los Angeles. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, to theatrical. To make it a more kind of theatrical.
Well, it needs a hook. It needs,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where they don't know. It's like we were out in Palm Springs earlier in January, and we did a show called That 60s Show.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know us, but they knew the music of the 60s.
Sure.
So they came, you know, obviously for that, and we did really well. So we have all these different theme shows, whether it's Irving Berlin and George Gershwin, Broadway.
We're doing
movies.
Piano Man, which is Billy Joel.
Billy Joel.
And Michael Feinstein at Metropolis in a month. And
we've
had some we loved. We loved the Jimmy Webb, James Taylor, Jimmy Van Heusen show. And we even were on WGN-TV, and the newscaster said, I didn't even know who Jimmy Van Heusen was.
Well, there's a lot they don't know on TV, but... But and you do, you both seem to, too, and we'll get into after the news at the bottom of the hour, get into, you don't take the easy way. And I love the notion of, you are dealing here in your new show, which is Reimagine the Beatles, with a generation, everybody knows the Beatles. Everybody, you know, that is one of the... sort of the real soundtrack of our life, and I am so curious to know what you mean by the whole reimagine the thing. Let me ask you before we take a break, why the Beatles? I mean, you've obviously the Lennon and McCartney are rather talented wordsmiths, but why now?
Well, I've wanted to do a Beatles show with Tom for 6 years.
And he said no?
He was afraid when he was a kid. He thought,
I never liked the Beatles. When I was growing up, I thought that if you listened to the Beatles, it automatically meant you were like addicted to LSD or something. I don't know.
I love that.
As an adult, I've really learned to appreciate them as
songwriters.
Yeah,
songwriters. They were brilliant songwriters.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
LSD.
I was into Broadway and that kind of stuff as a kid. And, you know, boy, I think this is going to be some of our finest work. Becky's arrangements for this show are really terrific, I think. And really reimagining these songs. So.
Well, it sounds incredibly exciting. Such songs as, I'm telling you, Eleanor Rigby, Come Together, Fool on the Hill. It is a nice, nice catalog you get to pull from. It's going to take place every Saturday during April at 8 o'clock at Davenport's. It's Davenport's, the great club at 1383 North Milwaukee Avenue, davenportspianobar.com. is the website. We got to take a commercial break, then we have to get some news, then I promise you we will talk more with Tom, Michael, and Becky Menzie. Sometimes they come in here. We've had a ball sometimes when you guys have come in, but it's late and they have to get ready for their April shows. So please,
we've been drinking today.
Who hasn't?
Not me.
Who hasn't? Who hasn't? say hello to your mates for me, too.
Okay.
And we'll be back after a short commercial break, and then I'll get some news, and then you will also hear these two grand talents sing. Welcome back to me, Rick Hogan, my friends Tom, Michael, and Becky Menzie on the telephone from separate locations to talk about their 20th anniversary as a duo and their new 2019 show, Reimagine the Beatles. Now, you two, I'll give all the websites, and it's Saturday nights at the amazing Davenport Cabaret. But in reimagining the Beatles, is there any notion of, I don't know, suppose they'd come, but offending any Beatles purists out there? Do you know what I mean?
Well, sure. There's always a possibility, but that's why it's exactly why we chose the title.
Right. Right.
Because we're not a cover band. We're not a cover band for anything.
No, you aren't.
We like to originate ideas, to have a fresh, unique take on beloved songs. That's kind of our artistic MO.
Mm-hmm.
So Lady Madonna starts off with a Bach intervention, a two-part piano intervention, and then goes into this gospel groove. And we have a really lovely take on Blackbird, that comes after a little interesting piano break in the Strawberry Fields. And everything is thought through to not only help you hear the lyric in a different way, but also to showcase what we do with that artist. Because they can listen to a million cover bands or listen to great recordings.
Yeah.
Can't do what they did. But we can bring our artistry to their songwriting and their
music. Well, and also your interpretive skills and your both of you immense talents. When you work through a song, and not to get too deep in the weeds here, but when you two decide, okay, I don't know how it works, but you say, Tom, I think we should do Fool on the Hill. What happens from that moment on?
We'll spend months on
yeah, I'll bet.
Arrangement. We started working on the show last summer.
Wow. Wow.
We always do. We plan. We spend the whole year, and we usually rehearse 2 to 3 times a week because it's not. We're not just doing the rehearsing on the Beatles show. We may have 4 different. We may be doing Richard Rodgers in Wisconsin, and the 60s show in Palm Springs, and Irving Berlin and George Gershwin in Florida within 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, I will bet. Just knowing, and admiring the two of you so much. And also being a huge Beatles fan and also seeing the potential for this kind of show, I would hazard to say this might become your most popular offering.
My husband swears, of course, he plays percussion in this show.
Yeah.
But Fool on the Hill is his favorite number in this show. But it's also the most that involves the most creative percussion.
So it's a show. So in essence, it's a showcase for him.
Yeah.
You two, I would love to. You were kind enough to send me a couple songs that will be performed in the show. One is, I guess, they're going to be 25, something like close to 30 songs in the show.
We match songs together. There's a hint of Eleanor Rigby hits up, goes back to Get Back, about lonely people, Get Back.
Ooh.
Where you're afraid of a little bit of lonely people, because the Beatles were at the height of their career during Beatlemania, had, you know, no hotel wanted them.
Sure.
And they had were writing a lot of songs about loneliness because they only had each other.
Yeah.
And
now,
so,
do you also, as I know, you also offer, you know, sort of a kind of narrative structure as you are introducing and talking about songs, and Tom can of course talk about the fact that he thought the Beatles took acid too much or whatever his reluctance was to do that. But that's another
about the Beatles.
And pardon me?
Yeah, we definitely tell stories about the Beatles. Some lesser known facts about them and stuff that are, you know, kind of interesting.
And we also will tell you stories about us because
that's who you are.
We want you to know us.
That is, of course. Well, there's an incredible intimacy to the best of cabaret, and you two are the best of cabaret. Let's hear, if we could, Adam Phillips, the great engineer, the Eleanor Rigby Get Back selection that Tom Michael and Becky Menzies sent. This is what you will hear beginning the first Saturday in April and running the next 3 Saturdays in April at 8 o'clock at Davenport's, their Reimagine the Beatles.
Take these these sunken eyes and learn to see all your love. You were only waiting for this moment to be free.
I'd heard that earlier today, too. I just say, wow. Adam Phillips, who knows music as well as anybody, is saying, wow, too. Tom Michael and Becky Menzie, that is just spectacular. And it just the, you know, even I can sense the artistic depth that goes into something like that. Congratulations on that, young people, friends of mine. Wow.
I love that you call us young.
I do. Well, I call everybody young. I don't care. 20th anniversary, who cares? I don't care how many years you've been together. I'm calling you young because you bring... I love that song, and I love the Beatles version of it, but that is just spectacular. Just spectacular. I'm going to play another song two before we are done for today. I'm going to take a little commercial break, then I'm going to hold you guys on for like just about 5 minutes because I want to talk a little bit more about your respective careers. And Becky, there's an anniversary coming up too for Monday Night at Pettorino's, isn't there?
500 Monday Night Lives. Denise McGowan, Tracy, and I, 500 nights.
Wow, because I remember when Denise first, I remember when...
I love her. She's the funniest person in the world.
Well, and that show is Tommy. I know you've been there a number of nights,
yeah,
too.
God.
It's like the greatest free show in town. I mean, you sit there and have a drink or dinner or something, but my God, the talent that gets up there is just amazing. So congratulations on that, too, Becky Menzie. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. I have a few more minutes, and you will hear some talk and song from Becky Menzie and Tom Michael, who have known each other for 30 years since Tom walked into Boombola knowing two songs, and his repertoire has grown considerably since. And they have been, and they're celebrating their 20th anniversary as a duo with this very exciting show that begins Saturday. April 6th and runs on April 6th, 13th, 20th, and 27th. Those are Saturdays in April. Reimagine the Beatles, which will take place at Davenport's. Go to davenportspianobar.com or you can go to Becky Menzie, BECKIEMENZIE.com or tommichael.net to get information about the you two have really had remarkable careers. Did the Beatles present, you have dealt with in your careers, the greatest songwriters in the history of songwriting, did the Beatles pose any particular challenge?
For me, it was trying to narrow it down to which songs to sing because there's so many good ones.
Yeah.
we're going to do this in August up at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan, and we're turning it into a two-act show. Here at Davenport's, it's a one-act show, so we're going to be adding some more material to it, which will be fun, you know, because there's just so many songs. They're just it's hard to choose.
Becky, and
I had different challenges, Rick. I had some of those early Beatles tunes are short.
Yeah.
And they don't tell stories, and they are radio play.
Yeah, two minutes and 20 seconds. Yeah, that kind of thing.
We have a lot of lyrics that allowed us to do what we do, which is really arranged, and that's why we've mashed some together. So Baby, You're a Rich Man is in Can't Buy Me Love.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And so what we try to do is add certain songs, you know, something in the way she moves. Is tied with You've Got to Hide Your Love Away in a really interesting way. So my challenges were to be thoughtful about the lyric on songs that weren't long enough to sometimes withstand.
That's so smart.
Being in a concert setting versus being in a radio setting.
Yeah.
Or listening, you know, or listening to a CD or whatever you might.
Well, I got to get up there because I saw the Beatles. I'm old enough. I saw the Beatles at Comiskey.
Where?
Comiskey. Comiskey Park, 1960.
Could you hear the Beatles, or just hear the girl screaming?
No, that's a great question, Tom. Because my father, you know, took me, my brother, and two girls from the neighborhood, and we went there, and I could not hear a thing. The screaming was so. We were in like the third row, front row. My brother told me the front row, but so I saw them, and I can't wait to see you two. You both are special to me, and the way you keep sort of exploring your immense talents is I think really it's an encouraging thing and a hopeful thing in a world that sometimes seems kind of hopeless. So you people listening out there, go to those websites and also think about all of you with vacation homes up in the southwestern part of Michigan. There's no finer venue around. Don't you guys love the Acorn Theater?
Yeah.
And, you know, David Fink, and just performers are treated with the respect and the tender, loving care that they absolutely deserve, and you two do. Becky Menzi and Tom Michael, Reimagine the Beatles, Saturday nights at Davenport's throughout the month of April, and then in August at the Acorn Theater. I'm going to end this show by saying goodbye to you two lovely people and playing another. I'm not going to even tell you what. If you can't tell what a Beatles song is, then you shouldn't be listening to the radio. Tom and Becky, good night, and knock 'em dead.
Thank you, Ray.
Sure, my pleasure. Always my pleasure. Say hello to your mates for me too. Love those guys. And Adam Phillips, let's see what this sounds like. Adam's excited.
Up the rice in the church where a wedding has been, lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All alone,
the lonely people.
Where do they all come from?
Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? Couldn't lie.
his home in Tucson, Arizona, for some California grass. Get back,
lonely people, get back.
Get back to where you once belong. Get back,
people,
get back. Where do they all belong? And was buried along with her name. Nobody came.
Father McKenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave.
No one was saved. All the lonely people, where do they all come from?
That is, okay, I am beyond impressed. Adam Phillips is too, and Adam Phillips knows more about music than almost anybody I know. Tom, Michael, and Becky Menzie are putting on this show, Reimagine the Beatles, are kind enough to send, people don't make CDs anymore. That's an MP3, something like that, and blah, blah, blah. But those two versions of those songs are very thoughtful. I mean, these two know what they're doing, and it's not just a... As Tom said, there are just too many good songs to choose from, and they will be performing the show Reimagine the Beatles Saturday nights in April. That's April 6, 13, 20, and 27 at Davenport's Cabaret, 1383 North Milwaukee Avenue. Go to davenportspianobar.com. I also think this show has potential to be among, and they've been together, these two, for now 20 years as a duo, and it's a special, special thing. I don't even think... I'm sort of a Beatles purist, and that didn't offend me at all. I thought it was a clever, clever reimagining of that. Also, on tonight's show, there was Nick Budabin talking about his movie Chi-Town, which you really should see. You can see it on iTunes, or you can see it on Amazon Prime. It is a story of a young Chicago basketball player living life on the tough and very mean streets of this city and, sort of triumphing. Then there's also the book we talked about with Rich Green, the very enthusiastic Rich Green, illustrator and writer, called Chicago Treasures, which my friend Larry Brotman put this together, a very talented photographer and a good guy, with all of the proceeds going to the Lighthouse for the Blind and to Access Living.